For me, you can travel as a political act, and you can also travel as a spiritual act. It's a great opportunity when you travel around the world to broaden your perspective and better understand our position here on this planet. I'm joined today by Jim Wallace. He's the founder and editor of Sojourners Magazine. He calls himself a peace and social justice advocate, a progressive evangelical. Jim Wallace, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here, Rick.
Now, you founded Sojourners. That in itself is a sort of a travel term.
Yeah, Sojourners means to be on a journey, on the way. You're a traveler, pilgrim. It's actually a metaphor for the church, or the people of God, or people who have a spiritual sense of who they are, or being in but not of the world, or having a global perspective and not just a narrow national one.
You just said something that I find very interesting. Something fundamental to a Christian's faith is having a global perspective?
Well, absolutely. I mean, when Jesus started this, it was a movement, not an institution. It wasn't a church. It was a movement. And it was a global movement, international. And so we ought to have more in common with people who share our faith around the world than just those who inhabit the same country. My wife's a Brit, Church of England minister, one of the first women ordained over there. She got here and she said, "Don't they know that God Bless America isn't found in the Bible?" I've learned most about the world from going to places I wasn't supposed to be. That's where I've learned most about the world.
From going to places you weren't supposed to be. Give me an example.
Well, I was raised in Detroit, but in white Detroit. And a few miles or blocks away in black Detroit, life is very different. And I kept asking, how come we've never been there? How come we never had a black preacher? And they said, "Oh, you're too young to understand," or, "Why is life so different in black Detroit?" I'd say, I was 14 years old, and they just say, "You'll understand when you get older," or, "We don't know," but they gave me one honest answer. If you keep asking this question, you're going to get into trouble.
Wow.
That proved to be true. I went in the city, and I got jobs alongside young black men my age, but I realized we lived in different countries.
So you can go inner-city travel here in the United States and go to another country.
It is.
And people can live their whole life and never know that country exists.
Never see it. Or in South Africa once, I was in a black township, and it was just completely barren, and the people were desperately poor. And literally 2 minutes away, I was in this white suburb, and the people in that white suburb didn't even know of the existence of this black township. And yet the people from the township would come and clean their houses and take care of their lawns and all the rest. So two countries side by side, and going to the one I wasn't supposed to be in taught me most about the one I was already in. During the Contra War in Nicaragua, you remember that? We had this mercenary army that we put together, and it was attacking civilians, and that story wasn't being told here. So these Christians from North Carolina came to see me one day. They said, "We were just in Jalapa on the northern frontier, and while we were there, the shelling of that village stopped. The Contras stopped shooting those mortars into because there were Americans there, and they didn't want to kill Americans and get in trouble with Washington. And so they said, would you come here more often? Send some of your friends." And
that's the whole human shield sort of approach.
Well, while they were there, that protected the people in the little village of Jalapa. And they, you know, they farm with them, they work with them, they got some of their kids. And so we sent, we started something called Witness for Peace. We sent 5,000 people from this country to the war zones of Nicaragua. And it was a transforming experience for each one of them. And they came back not just against a war as a sort of political thing, but these were their friends. These were places and people that they had been. So I remember I was one time doing the commissioning for a delegation from Cleveland. And in the middle of that, I got a call. And Ocotal, tiny city next to Jalapa, had just been attacked by the Contras. And there were people literally lying in the streets who had been killed. And the Marino sisters called and told me the story. Well, in that room, people began to cry, and I said, "What's the matter?" They said, "That's where we were, in Ocotal, 2 weeks ago."
Oh, no.
I wonder what happened to Jose or Maria. They began to cry and pray. These are Clevelanders, and we held hands and prayed for the people of Ocotal by name. And as soon as we were done, they just shot out of the room. They went to the media, the newspapers, TV, and told the story of what had happened in Ocotal. And so you had 5,000 activists against the war in Nicaragua because they had been there. These people were now their friends, and their friends were in danger.
When you travel, you gain an empathy for people who are having epic struggles.
Sure.
That you wouldn't know otherwise. Marching with the people in El Salvador, remembering the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero, you pass a monument in the capital city, San Salvador, that looks just like the Vietnam Monument. It's a knockoff of the Vietnam Memorial, and it's got 50,000 names chipped into it.
Yeah.
Each of them died in that civil war.
Well, when the Jesuits were killed in San Salvador by death squads that our government was actually paying for, the Jesuits here went down, and they took pictures right away, and there was these slaughtered brothers. They came back, and I went with the Jesuits. We knelt and prayed outside the White House with those pictures, with those terrible photos. And the Jesuits, these are their brothers who were killed. These weren't foreigners. These were their Jesuit. And the bond was just so deep and so strong. And I find that when I got a call from the leading pastor in Nicaragua, he said, they're going to invade Nicaragua. They're going to invade. Please stop them. I said, stop them. How can I stop them? And we decided to go to our congressional offices, the U.S. was to invade Nicaragua, and stay there until a debate happened in the Congress or the invasion stopped or we would be taken to jail. Well, 90,000 people made that pledge, the pledge of resistance. And when I learned later, when they decided whether or not to invade Nicaragua, it was the domestic cost of having to put, and half of them were Catholic nuns. They'd have had to put them in jail.
Well, these Catholics caused such a problem, don't they?
Well, they'd been in Nicaragua. They had seen the truth. They empathized, and they had friends.
The Catholics I met in Central America, many of them were excommunicated, and they said, part of our vow of obedience to the church is disobedience to the church.
Right, right. Sometimes, and Dr. King taught me this a long time ago, sometimes when the law is being used to hurt people or to preserve injustice, you have to break that law. That's what Christians have done over the years. When I've been to the war zones in places where most Americans never get to go, or in the Middle East, and I've seen the checkpoints, and I've seen, kids living on garbage dumps in Manila. They're living on the garbage dumps in Manila. You just have a different perspective. Social change happens when our perspective changes. It's not just a matter of having a political view or have to change your perspective to see the world in a different way for change to occur.
And if you're a person of faith who wants to get guidance from the Bible, you become able to read the Bible through third world eyes.
Well, absolutely. I was in the Philippines one time staying with a friend of mine who was going out to the poorest of the poor communities. And we had it was liberation theology at its most basic level. And we had a Bible study in this home. And this young woman, who was the mother, she had walked 2 hours to get food for us. The special meal was anchovies in the rice, And then she led a Bible study that night with the whole community in the house about what the scriptures meant for that week's lectionary. And they would together present the sermon on Sunday morning.
But that's a liberation theology approach, which applies it concretely and boldly to their life today.
Yeah, and what they were doing is they were fighting the loggers who were cutting down the forests on their hillsides, causing erosion to occur to take their farming away, and the rivers were being polluted. They were fighting that battle against these outside corporations, and they won their battle. But the foundation of it was their Bible study. And the courage, I remember in South Africa once in the heart of the struggle, I was sent to this township because they wanted to show me around. This young man meets me, Jam Jam. And was told I was coming and he would show me around. So he takes me around his whole village, the township. And there are these military strong points in every single black township in South Africa. And sure enough, before long, we were surrounded by military vehicles, automatic weapons. And we were just, it was me and Jam Jam, and that was it. Taken in and interrogated by the South African security police, guns aimed at our heads. And they said to Jam Jam, we know who you are. You were in prison, and you know what happened to you in prison? He was tortured. He says, if you keep behaving this way, you're going to go right back there. Jam Jam pulls out a New Testament out of his shirt, puts it down. He says, sir, I'm a Christian, and I'm not afraid. And they let us go because I was with him, and I was a pastor, an American. And on the way out of town, I said, Jam Jam, why did you take a risk in showing a stranger around your township? He says, because I want the people of my township to know that they have white comrades too. and that someday we're going to have to learn to live together. And I've been in jail. I've been tortured. They've done all they can do to me. I'm just going forward now. I'm just going forward now. Now, when I find that kind of courage, or kids in black townships who told me at 14 when I'd say, will your children breathe free air in South Africa? 14-year-old kids looked me in the eye and said, I will see to it. I will see to it. Now, that was 10 years before I was at the inauguration of Nelson Mandela. But when I saw that hope and that courage, I knew that apartheid was doomed. It was finished because young people decided, 14-year-olds worried about their kids, that's what changes the world. So how would I have ever experienced that if I didn't go there? If I just read books about South Africa, read policy statements, I've been changed and transformed when I meet the kids in townships or in garbage dumps and they tell me what their hopes for their future are.
Jim, when you think about liberation and theology, it's complicated by political and economic ideology. Liberation theology is written off by a lot of people as socialist or something. Today, not back in the Sandinistas and Contra times, but today in the developing world, is there still liberation theology?
Well, the heart of that really was the experience of ordinary people who were trying to understand their faith in the midst of their own circumstances. So today, when I go out and speak, half the audience is under 30 every single time, and half of them are under 25 because this new generation is globalized. Mm-hmm. They've gone on mission trips all over the world. They've seen, they've tasted, they've touched, they've smelled a different kind of existence. They've seen the 3 billion people who live on less than $2 a day.
That's half
of
humanity.
God's children. And that is the most important political fact of the world that is never mentioned, never quite said out loud. But a whole bunch of young people of faith now have seen that around the world. They've gone on all these trips and they've been transformed. My nephews and nieces went to Haiti just last month, and they came back different people.
Yeah.
And I've seen that again and again. So I don't think people learn as much. It's not the book or the lecture or the ideology. It's going and seeing firsthand, meeting people, becoming friends across boundaries. That's what changes our perspective. The world looks different. When you come home from that, it's a culture shock often.
It's a culture shock in reverse when you get home. Right.
You see, often we're so caught up with petty things, small things, mm-hmm. very minor things, mm-hmm. and you've just been with people who are, it's life and death for them, and you've seen it, tasted it, touched it. You know, when Bono, he often told me, what transformed him from being a musician who had these concerns, he was the one, he's in Ethiopia in a refugee camp.
Really? Bono got clued into all this stuff actually by going to Ethiopia.
Oh, yeah. He was in Ethiopia in a camp. And, of course, he's a big star. And,
right.
And so this father hands him his little infant son. Uh-huh. Now, as a rock star used to the photo op, you know, he smiles, holds a kid. Then he's going to give the boy back to his dad. And the father says, no, please, would you take him with you? If he stays here, he's going to die. My son's going to die. Tears in his eyes. A father says, take him with you. I'm the dad of a 12-year-old and a 7-year-old. I can't imagine handing my son to someone saying, take him away to save his life. Bono couldn't do that because of the legalities, but he says to this day, I carry that boy with me.
Oh, my goodness.
Now wherever I go. But he had to go and see it. He couldn't just read articles and books. And this isn't sort of an ideological commitment. It's a human one.
But the big step is, I think, to ask why and seek economic justice. And that's the real challenge. Mother Teresa is so beloved, but part of that is because she never asked why.
Well, Domhilder Câmara, who is the archbishop in Brazil, like Oscar Romero.
Oscar Romero asked why.
Yeah, and what Câmara said was, when I feed the hungry, they call me a saint. When I ask why they're hungry, they call me a communist. You know, Glenn Beck now calls me a communist and a Marxist and a socialist because I talk about social justice. And he says, when you talk about social justice, you're really a communist. And I said, no, this is integral to what the Bible says. At the heart of the gospel is the call to justice. Personal transformation, absolutely, but social transformation as well. And so it's a scary thing. You know, Glenn Beck says, Jim Wallis is one of the most dangerous men in America. Well, from his point of view, I hope that's true.
I'm sitting at the table with one of the
most
dangerous men in America right now. Whoa.
when you ask why people are hungry or poor or homeless, not just let's help them out, but why they are poor, that raises the issues of justice, fairness. The prophets in the Bible again and again talk about things like land, labor, and capital, employers, employees, rulers, princes, widows and orphans. This is what they talk about, and they're issues of justice.
You know, the amazing thing to me, Jim Wallace, is that Americans are so well-traveled, but we forget that you don't have to go back to Hawaii again and again and again and learn nothing.
Well, or you know this well, Americans go to resorts and there's like these walls, you know, a block or 2 blocks away. And you know what? Talk to the people who are serving you. Normally, they have one change of clothes, one shirt for their job, and that's all they've got. Now, when I've been in those places, not very often, I often go back to their homes. You know, I talk to them for a while, we hang out, and I say, where do you live? And they say, I say, why don't we go have a cup of coffee where you live?
Anybody could do that. That's a travel tip.
Yeah, but there's all these signs up that says, don't do that.
Right.
Don't go within 1 block of the hotel because it's dangerous. And I said, hey, man, I'm from Detroit. I'm from D.C. I've done gang truces, you know, with Crips and Bloods. I'm sure these streets aren't tougher than my streets. But that's where you learn. And you learn how they barely survive on that job and have literally only one shirt they wash every single night.
So point is, you could go to Cancun or Mazatlan, and one afternoon you could just adventure inland instead of the beach.
You're told not to.
But you can do that. You can broaden your perspective and come home with what I think is the most exciting souvenir, a better understanding of this planet. Jim Wallace, founder and editor of Sojourners Magazine, thank you so much for sojourning with us today.
Tell your folks to go where they're not supposed to be, and that's where they'll learn the most about their lives and their world.
Rick Steves teaches smart European travel. At ricksteves.com, you'll find an archive of interviews from his radio show, free audio tours of Europe's top sites, a monthly travel newsletter, and a world of information to help you turn your European travel dreams into smooth and affordable reality. To gear up for your next European adventure, begin your trip at ricksteves.com.